Okay, this is to convene our special called meeting at 12:05 for the purposes of taking action on items from the board meeting that we had to cancel due to weather. At this point, I'm going to recess without objection for 20 minutes, and we'll reconvene at 12:30. Good afternoon. We're going to reconvene this special called meeting. On our agenda, we have the first thing we have is the adoption of the consent calendar.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to approve and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? The consent calendar is adopted. Item 2.01, the superintendent's report. Mr. Royster, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. A note before I give my superintendent's report. Customarily, we introduce the new personnel that you just approved. We will do that at the board meeting later this month, so they have opportunity. Some of them like to bring their spouse with them or their family, so we will introduce them, though you approved them today. We'll do that during the regular board meeting. Now, I think Ms. Brinkman has to load my presentation.
Yes.
Thank you. No, I don't have one. I'm going to somewhat read from my notes, but what I want to talk about is this is a rather timely topic, inclement weather. As you might imagine, every time we have inclement weather, we have the responsibility to make decisions about our students, our employees, whether we have school, whether we cancel school, whether we run a delay. So then our report, originally scheduled for the board meeting last month, the nighttime meeting, is really to just review some of what goes into deciding how to close schools. Now, there apparently are those that believe that there is little scientific methodology that goes into that. We simply listen to the weather report, and if it indicates we should stock up on milk and bread, then we call school off or have a delay. Well, there's more to it than that, as you all know, but those in the broader public audience may not be aware of. As you heard, our students that participate in the Inter High Council talked to you about earlier today, they have received this same information, similar information to what I'm going to share with you tonight. And I think all of you know there is no perfect decision. If you don't believe that, just check social media on any of those days when it was questionable whether we should go to school, go late, or not. And it doesn't matter what opinion you look for, you will find it there. We either shouldn't have gone, we should have gone, we shouldn't have gone on time. There is every opinion that you might wish to have. And all those opinions are good to have, but at the end of the day, we have to make a decision, and our decision impacts and affects the safety of our students and our employees. So I want to talk with you a little bit about the methodology we do use and to talk a little bit about the group of people that are part of making this decision, that give me the information to make the final call. And as you all know, the final decision rests with me. Now, there are a lot of people involved in giving me information. There are a lot of people involved in assessing conditions. But at the end of all that, I have to make that decision. And I'm going to make the decision that I believe is in the best interest of all those involved, students, parents, and our employees. We have an inclement conditions evaluation team, an ICE team, if you will. Now, we came up with that because we thought that was kind of a clever way to say it. Used to be called a snow patrol 20 years ago. But the responsibilities of this group extend beyond snow or ice, hence inclement conditions evaluation, because we could have a tornado, we could have an earthquake, we can have ice, we can have snow, we can have high winds, we could have a lot of natural and or other disasters that could occur that could impact our students, our employees, or our facilities. So that, hence the term inclement conditions evaluation team. In winter, they begin to make preparations for potential winter weather several days out. Members of the team are set up to automatically receive weather alerts and notifications as soon as winter weather, extreme cold, or any type of severe storm is forecast. At that point, we begin monitoring forecasts from multiple sources, among them NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, WeatherBug, Weather Underground, AccuWeather, the Weather Channel, Duke Energy Meteorologist, the FAA, and local meteorologist. As you would expect, we focus on scenarios that are consistent among the various forecasting models, since that is reasonably what's most likely to occur. Occasionally, those forecasts don't pan out, as you're aware. So we try not to make decisions simply based on forecast. We wait to evaluate conditions, and we try to track those conditions over time to see if the forecast is bearing out, in fact, in the path that's predicted. That's the long answer to say this. We want to know what it's doing in Atlanta. Because in what it's doing in Atlanta, likely in somewhere between an hour and a half to 3 hours, it will be doing here. More often than not, bad weather is predicted for overnight, and attendance decisions cannot be made the day before because frozen precipitation forecasts in Greenville are notoriously hard to make. Often our area is right on the rain or freezing line of storms that they may swerve, they may change direction, they may break apart before they get here. Or there may be 2 degrees difference in temperature, which can make a difference. Often our area is right on that line. We don't want to use a snow day unnecessarily. For one reason, it impacts instruction. For another reason, it negatively impacts our families, because parents have to make arrangements for their children, particularly younger children. On those days that we can't make that decision, it's not clear cut the day before, our ICE team, those that go out as a part of the ICE team, which is more than 20 individuals, roll out somewhere around 4 a.m. They go out on the roads throughout the counties, not only to assess current driving conditions, but whether those conditions are improving or deteriorating. As part of their assessments, they take air and pavement temperatures. You saw a picture of that. There's Terry Mills, who's taking pavement reading actually up on Highway 11 the other afternoon. They use state-of-the-art point-and-shoot thermometers, and they report back via radio so that all the members of the team can hear all the reports from throughout the county. Additionally, they inspect every one of our 100 facilities to check for power outages, any broken windows, wind damage to roofing, exterior siding or canopies, water intrusion, downed trees, roof damage, snow and ice conditions on the parking lot, snow and ice conditions on the sidewalks, anything that might adversely affect attendance at school that's not readily apparent just because of the outside weather conditions. In the meantime, about 5 other members of the team are busy with various tasks, which include checking information sources with the South Carolina Highway Patrol, the Greenville County 911 dispatcher, receiving and compiling all the reports. As you can imagine, as these 20 plus people are covering various areas of the county, and they're checking road conditions, and they're noting conditions in various, in a lot of cases, predetermined points, low spots, bridges, overpasses, shady areas. They're reporting all that back in. Somebody has to track all that, so when we reach the time to make a decision, we have access to the information that's compiled from throughout the county. We're contacting other entities, such as Duke Power, DOT, about conditions in some cases that we have observed that we're reporting to them so they can address, in other cases to find out from them conditions they may be aware of that we haven't yet discovered. During all of this, I'm listening to all that over the radio, and I'm out. For 2 reasons. One, I want to see firsthand the conditions that exist if I'm gonna make that final decision. And secondly, I don't want to ask these folks to do things that I'm not willing to do myself. We also talk with the districts surrounding us, particularly those that are similar to us in topography and geography. That would be Pickens, Oconee, and the northern side of Spartanburg County. Oftentimes, we talk also with the districts in Anderson and Lawrence and the lower part of Spartanburg County. So we share information back and forth because there is an imaginary line up there between Pickens and Greenville County, between Spartanburg 1 and Greenville. The weather doesn't necessarily stop at that line. So we share information about conditions as well as our thinking about what we might do for that day to ensure the safety of all those involved. By 5:15, generally speaking, we need to have a decision. Because any later than that, we have to deal with the fact that we already have bus drivers departing from bus centers. Now, you see a picture up there at the bus center. On those nights of extreme cold, those nights where the temperatures were forecast to be below the mid-teens. Now, this isn't every night when we have freezing temperatures, but on those nights, we've deployed personnel to every bus center in the county, and every bus was started periodically through the night, and a number of them were moved back and forth on the property. The reason for that is certain number of our buses, the way they're designed and constructed, the brake lines and the other hydraulic lines can freeze. If you don't crank them during the night and physically move them back and forth on the lot, that line can freeze up and you can't use the bus. And it doesn't suffice to just go in early in the morning, which we do on any cold day. They have a cold start crew at every bus center. And they go in and early start all the buses so they can immediately report any mechanical problems and get a mechanic there. On those extreme cold nights, there was at least one employee and a guard at every one of those bus centers ensuring that those buses would start the next morning. In addition to determining whether conditions are safe during the early morning hours, we have to consider forecasts that show whether or not those conditions may deteriorate during the day. And the other thing that we have to think about when weather is forecast during the day, from the time we dismiss school to the time the last bus arrives back at its bus center is 4 hours. So whatever it's doing, we have to back 4 hours or add 4 hours onto that schedule and realize that what it's doing now, we can't just make our decision based on right now. We've got to be looking at 4 hours down the road. No pun intended. It's not as good a pun as the Rubber Mount Science Center. We have to look 4 hours down the road to see what the conditions may be when the buses are returning to the bus center. Not only do we want students to have a safe ride home, we want to ensure those drivers can safely return to the center and get in their personal vehicle and go home. Now, I mentioned to you earlier about that window of time from the time it's doing something in Atlanta to the time it may do something here. One of the things that we often do at times where we might be considering early dismissal or early in the morning when we're looking at the approaching weather, we actually send somebody to the Georgia line to see what the condition actually is right there on the Georgia line where 85 crosses from Georgia into South Carolina. And that person gives us back a report of what's actually taking place there. In best case scenarios, storms move in during the afternoon or early evening hours. Then if temperatures are forecast to remain below freezing overnight, it's pretty easy for us to make a decision and to communicate it to our families. And we try to do that as soon as we can when those are the conditions that are present. Likewise, in cases of extreme cold without precipitation, we can study various hourly temperature forecasts the day before and determine whether to delay. If a delay is necessary, we take into consideration the time of sunrise to determine how long the delay should be so that bus drivers are not waiting in the dark to be picked up during single-digit temperatures or wind chills that have, in the past 2 years, on a couple of occasions, sent the temperature, the real temperature, below zero. This delay focuses solely on the needs of bus riders who may not have adequate cold weather clothes to wait safely in single-digit temperatures, compounded by the fact, as you all are well aware, we have this aging bus fleet. We never can predict when a bus may have a mechanical failure and they have to wait even longer on the side of the road, even though we've sent those groups out to crank those buses and run them during the night. For this reason, because this only applies to bus students waiting, everybody else can run out and get in the car as quickly as they can, whether they're an employee or another student. For this reason, we expect our employees to report and we open buildings at the usual times so that students who are arriving by their parents' transportation can be dropped off at the regular time so as not to negatively impact our families. We do expect that schools have enrichment activities to take place during the delayed start time, so that students are engaged and they're working with those students. We're not losing an opportunity, but we're not doing something that would cause them to advance beyond where the students are that ride the bus. Additionally, no students are marked tardy if they arrive at school by the delayed start time. A number of factors influenced my decision to cancel, delay, or dismiss early, and I want to take this opportunity to thank every one of those individuals that participated in that process. And if there are those individuals here today, I'd ask that you stand. I know there's some of you out there that participate in this process. We're going to make the best possible decision on behalf of our more than 83,000 students and employees. I also want to thank all those that are not here today. And you see pictures of some of these individuals. The ones that go out, the operations employees that scrape, salt, sand, parking lots and sidewalks and address any of those issues that our team has discovered as they check every one of these facilities. Again, I thank each of those individuals, those present here today and those that are here today. I would ask that you share my appreciation with those that report to you that are a part of this very important process to safeguard our students and our faculty and our staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Royster. And I will say we certainly appreciate the work you do, and I personally appreciate that you don't ask the chair to be part of that 20-person team that has to go out at 4 a.m.
The ice woman coming.
Yes. So do any of the board members have any comments about the superintendent's report?
So
Mr. Baxter.
The name of the team?
From snow to ice.
Oh, I thought you said snow bunnies to the ice. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter, for making up for Mr. Meek and Mr. Sailor's not being here for the comments from the peanut gallery. All right, and now we're going to move on to the action items that we need to deal with. Action item number 3.01 is policy KNBA, complaints about instructional materials. The recommended motion from the Committee of the Whole is to approve the revision to board policy KNBA as presented. It does not need a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The motion carries. Item 3.02, long-range facilities plan. The recommended action. The recommended motion from the Committee of the Whole is to approve the 2015 long-range facilities plan and capital improvement plan as presented, including the use of $5,438,300 of general fund balance for FF&E associated with four construction projects. Coming from the Committee of the Whole, it does not need a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Action item 3.03, renewal of lease of Old Bryson Elementary. The recommended motion, again, coming from the Committee of the Whole, is to approve a new lease agreement with the Center for Community Services. Coming from the Committee of the Whole, it does not need a second. Is there any discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 3.04, best board resolution.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Rowletter.
I move to approve the attached best bond resolution, which authorizes the superintendent to refinance best bonds in accordance with the best bond resolution.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any questions? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 3.05, Student Activity Fund Audit. Presented here, we have a recommended motion. Is there a maker before discussion?
Madam Chair, I move to accept the audit of student activity funds for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2014.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion or questions on the information? Mr. Barber is here to answer those questions for us. Dr. O'Connor.
Yes. I just wanted to ask if there's any
consideration given, not just to the number of infractions noted, but the magnitude of those infractions. And also that it seems that our larger schools would have more transactions to make. So I wonder if there's a consideration for the percentage of infractions to actual transactions, and if that would make a difference, because maybe it's like apples and oranges to the larger number of transactions that a school has to make versus a small number of transactions.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, high schools have a lot more transactions, so they have a probability of having more errors made because the sample sizes are larger, the transactions are larger, and we test more transactions at a high school than at, an elementary school.
So even with like a Malden and Hillcrest being the largest high schools in the district, you would expect to see higher percentages there because the number of transactions there exceeds those from the other high schools also?
I think that's a fair statement, yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Knox, did you want to speak to that?
About higher percentages, it depends on the training of the bookkeeper, how long the bookkeeper's been there. Depends also on the importance that the principal relays to the staff on handling the funds. We have some schools, bookkeepers in very large schools that do a very good job, and the staff and the principal do a very good job. So it has a lot of stuff that comes into play. Now, usually you would say a higher sample, a higher maybe error rate would be detected, but sometimes that is not the case based on the training, based on the staff at that school.
One of the things that, we look for from the administration side when Mr. Barber provides us with the summary of these audits, Jeff and his staff go through them and look at that and try to discern anything like that that requires us to take additional action. One of the things that we look at, and it's in, there's an awful lot of material in here, but one of the things we look at is total occurrences, in other words, how many observations they have, and what we consider to be, both what Rick's staff would consider to be and what Jeff's staff would consider to be significant observations. And our number of significant observations are down this year from the year before. But we then go in and look at every school and the kinds of observations. We also look back at their past history and are they improving? Are they having fewer observations, fewer serious observations, or do they appear to be about where they were, or do they appear to perhaps be going in the wrong direction? And unless it's moving in a positive direction, then Jeff works with the appropriate assistant superintendent and that individual principal to do whatever we need to do to get that school on the right track, so to speak, where they're improving in those findings as opposed to staying the same or, moving perhaps in a negative direction. But we always try to look at this. I think I can remember looking at one last year, but where there were a lot more findings, but the sample was much bigger. So that's always something we look at. If you find 200 findings this year in a sample of 1,000, and you found 150 last year in a sample of 500, we're actually improving even though you had more findings. So they look at all of these really down to the individual school, in a lot of cases, Jeff, individual transaction level to analyze what may be behind the findings and what we need to do and what those principals need to do in their schools to ensure that we are getting the best results we can get. We are always going to have some findings because these are all human beings. They're going to make mistakes. But when you see a pattern of things that indicate it's not a mistake, it's perhaps inattentiveness or sloppiness, or we hope it's not, but sometimes it might be a disregard for the rules, those are the things we need to address. We want to have as few findings as possible, but we realize that, again, people are going to make errors, particularly as the to the point you made earlier, Dr. O'Connor, when some of our bookkeepers just have thousands and thousands of transactions, they're going to make a mistake. What we want to do is fix the if we find a pattern of error.
Okay, thank you.
And I apologize, Mr. Barber. Did you have anything you wanted to say about these audits that you're presenting to us? as a general?
I mean, I had a large presentation, but...
Let him make it.
No, I mean, the errors did decrease from the prior fiscal year. The total reduction was a 26% reduction, and the significant observations also decreased by 48%.
Take your time. I'm not rushing you. I apologize that I didn't ask you that first.
No, that's perfectly fine.
This is good information.
Yes.
I would suggest, in addition to what Rick said, if you look at page 1 and 2 of his executive summary, that provides excellent information about schools that were improving. Because one of the things that we asked Mr. Barber to do as part of our process of dealing with schools that maybe are not where they should be, is we asked them to go back in and include them in their audit plan for the coming year, which they do. So you'll see how many improved. You'll see that there are a list of 6 schools that had 0 audit errors, had a number of 9 schools with only with 1 to 10. Then you'll see the last group down there where that's our needs improvement. That last group there, that's the group we've got to work with. Those are the errors that we must get corrected. Then if you look at the second page, he also describes for you in summary improvements that are made. So again, folks through the in the finance department, they've been through this as Rick and his staff have been. And if you look at this from just a paper standpoint, they've been through, that stack of documents to the level that we believe we need to go to address any shortcomings that are identified. I'm very appreciative of Mr. Barber and his staff for the thorough job they did.
Derek, Mr. Lewis.
I was really impressed with the reduction in findings. I was also really struck by the number of schools that have increased their fund balance by 20% or 30% since last year. Is there any guidance that's been provided by the district of what a good fund balance is for a school? Like, do they have a target that they're working towards?
Yeah.
There is not. At times, a school may try to save some funds to make a large purchase the following year. Generally, once a principal is out of school for 3 or 4 years, they get a good feeling of what kind of fund balance they need to have on hand, knowing what kind of expenditures are coming up. If they have any questions, we're happy to meet with them, go over their investments, go over where the funds are being spent, make sure they're prepared for next year, but no hard, fast rule.
And is their fund balance in any way affect the allocations that they may get from the district for other expenses?
No, sir.
If you look at the fund balance, the majority of the significant increases were at the elementary school level. And the underlying reason behind all those are better performance out of their daycare program. So the daycare program run efficiently is a significant moneymaker for elementary schools, which they don't have to go out and sell wrapping paper and candy bars and go door to door like they used to have to do years ago, and half those fundraisers didn't make any money. But so that's the significant increase in fund balance for elementary schools.
Mr. Baxter.
I want to go back to a point that Mr. Royce was alluded to earlier about discrepancies. And I know you mentioned that if you find discrepancies, I know there's probably some type of training process that you send the bookkeepers through. Do you find that when you go back and do a re-audit, do you find many people still making those same mistakes? And if you do, what process do you have in place to handle that kind of situation?
Well, that's the administration's part of handling the training and so forth. But when my staff is at the, when we conduct the audit, we go over all the observations with the bookkeeper and principal and anyone else that's involved, the fixed asset person. So we explain to them what we're doing, what they did, and we try to show them their errors. And we'll try to help them if they don't understand a certain thing, how to properly account for something. We try to explain the best we can. So the audit for us, it's also an audit, but we also try to help them explain any questions that they may have. But the administration does the initial training.
Okay. Jeff, if you would speak to that, please.
Yeah, Mr. Baxter, during the course of last year, which was July 2013 through June 2014, in the summer of 2013, we held our annual financial training. Then in the fall or spring of last year, we have a new bookkeeper training session, which is mandatory for new bookkeepers to attend, and any other bookkeeper who wants to attend. We also visited 31 schools in the course of last year for one-on-one training for the bookkeepers. If they need additional help, long-time bookkeepers, new bookkeepers, we can see a trend in the course of the year, looking at their bank statements every month, what kind of expenditures they're occurring and how they're doing their transactions, whether they need some additional one-on-one training. We also have a training in May for new bookkeepers, another mandatory training in May, anybody else who wants to show up. And then in our accounting system, we can actually shadow them online and live. So we can actually see the transactions they are doing on our computer screens also. So we conduct training in that manner also. Okay.
That's good. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Suddeth.
I agree with Mr. Royster. We do have a lot of improvements with our elementary schools. Also saw we're 19 schools had made significant improvements, and we still have 10 schools that need to be improved upon. Always concerned about our money situation, our cash investments, our cash receipts. And the only thing that I really emphasized on was our student activity funds, where the bank reconciliation adjustment reflected improper accounting procedures. That was a total of 15. And where our cash and check per receipt did not agree to cash and check per deposit slip, 42, that's a problem. And the third and final was the sales and use tax not submitted to the district. That was 105. As I always say, we need to make sure about what we're doing with our money through our student activity funds, because we have experienced real problems in those areas in the past. That's all I have. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Wells,
yes,
is it proper for me to address the concerns, Ms.?
Sure, please.
When I saw the inappropriate bank reconciliations, of course, that caught my attention. What occurred at two different schools was the bookkeeper had about five, six different adjustments to make to the bank statement. And instead of making each individual adjustment by itself, the bookkeeper netted all those adjustments down to one figure and posted that transaction. So that caught our attention. There was supporting documentation for each adjustment made, and the bookkeeper should have made individual adjustments instead of netting them together.
Okay. You have something to add, Mr. Barber?
That is correct. In the cash receipting policy, that the increase in cash receipt errors were attributed to a new cash receipting policy that the district instituted this year. So I think we had a little bit of a learning curve. It required the person, when they actually recorded, when they took the money from possibly a student, on the cash receipt, they were supposed to indicate whether that was a check or cash, and they made some errors doing that. So the increase in cash receipting errors were actually totaled 106 collectively when you added up those two categories. That was the reason for the increase in cash receipting errors this year.
Okay.
So hopefully with, knowing that in the staff, so that everybody's involved in cash receipting, teachers, bookkeepers, and so forth. So with that, getting used to that new policy, that hopefully will go away or be minimal next year.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Dr. O'Connor.
Yes, because I appreciate this thorough report that we've kind of picked apart with our questions first, I just want to go back and make sure that we notice some of the important parts. Don't you think it's remarkable that we decreased over the last 2 years significant observations by almost half?
Yes, ma'am.
That seems like something to celebrate to me.
There really are. There's a lot of things to celebrate in this report.
So, that the total number of significant observations decreased from 618 to 324, or 48%. That's unusual, it seems to me, to make that dramatic a shift in a two-year period from what we normally hear, isn't it?
Well, I think it's I would guess it's attributed to the administration and the staff to impress upon, you know, the bookkeepers and principals to reduce the number of errors.
And in some cases, the very schools who have shown an improvement over the last 2 years are still in the group of significant findings, I think. So we don't want to make the mistake of thinking that because they appear there, that's, you know, they haven't been among the schools making huge improvements over the last couple of years.
Right.
So just wanted to point that out too.
But the other category that I think is really impressive is the 19 schools that we audited in both fiscal years. We had 8 of those that made significant improvements and reduced the number of errors down. And they those were schools were listed. They were Buena Vista Elementary went from 49 to 11. Fort Shoals Elementary went from 59 to 19. Fountain Inn Elementary, 56 to 27. Eastside High, 46 to 21. Hillcrest High went from 222 to 93. Still, I mean, significant improvement. Fine Arts Center, 42 to 20. Greenview Child Development Center, 81 to 32. And Sterling School, 91 to 14. So, you know, that was one thing that I think the board wanted us to look at. You know, schools that had high error rate in the prior year, to go ahead and go back and do it again, and we've done that and have some success here. So,
okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. O'Connor. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, the motion on the floor is to accept the audit of student activity funds for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2014. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That concludes our action items that we have for today's special called meeting.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Rowletter.
Singing how it's 1308.
Oh my gosh, it is.
I move we adjourn.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we're adjourned.
And 10 minutes after you want to announce the committee or no?
Oh, and board members, just as a reminder, we have a board evaluation committee meeting 10 minutes after this meeting's adjourned.
Well, let's not make it too late. Let's get it done.
Yeah.